Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org. Well, hello, and welcome to Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and my guest today is Rebecca Mostow. She's the Education Program Manager for the Western Flyer Foundation in Monterey, California, and I know lots of listeners will identify the Western Flyer because it found its new life here in the Shipwrights Co-op and has become a wonderful addition to education programs on our West Coast. Well, Rebecca is giving a lecture in the Port Townsend Marine Science Center's Future of the Ocean series. It'll be on Sunday, February the 5th, and the talk is titled Hybrid in a Haystack, and the subtitle, Hybrid Beach Grasses, Discovery, Description, and Ecological Consequences in the Pacific Northwest. Well, we'll talk more about the particulars of that lecture later on. And in today, we'll just sort of explore dune ecosystems, talk a bit about dune grasses, and talk about this new hybrid species that just raises a lot of unanswered ecological questions. So welcome, Rebecca. So glad you could join us.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's great to be here.
Via Zoom from Monterey. First, before we talk, as usual, let's hear this week's mystery sound. And a little hint, that's the sound of sand dunes and beaches. We'll come back later in the show and identify the maker of that sound and learn a little bit about it. Now, back to Rebecca. Let me tell you just a bit more about her. She's a coastal ecologist, and she's an educator with lots and lots of experience. And she has integrated her scientific research with a lot of community outreach and teaching. And in fact, if you've been around town for a long time, you may have met Rebecca when she was here with the Port Townsend Marine Science Center. I think you said 2015, 16?
Yep, right.
As an AmeriCorps member. Mm-hmm. So Rebecca has done a lot of research and has investigated this new sort of novel hybrid beach grass in the Pacific Northwest using various ecological, genetic, and what she calls participatory science methods. And when we were first chatting about this program, Rebecca reminded me of a very curious story involving another past resident of Port Townsend, Frank Herbert. Frank was the author of the Dune Saga. And I want to briefly share that story with you. And Rebecca, pop in if you want to add anything. Back in 1957, Frank Herbert was on an assignment from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. He came out to the Oregon Dunes from the coast to write a story about the successes of planting grasses on the crest of the sand dunes with the intent of stabilizing those dunes so they wouldn't move around like they would normally do, and to keep them from inundated highways or bothering residences, or it was just sort of a man-made issue they were trying to resolve. Well, that article, I understand, was never published. But Frank Herbert realized that he had a much, much, much bigger story to tell. The shifting sands inspired what I think most people know, the Dune Saga. Untold number of stories. The first book was published in 1965, and science fiction at its grandest. It's got adventure, it's got mysticism, and it's got environmentalism, ecology, and politics. It's boldly ecologically literate. And I found a quote from one of the major characters whose preaching, I guess as you could call that, or teaching perhaps, about the dune ecosystem. And he says, "A system maintains a certain fluidity that can be destroyed by a misstep in just one niche. A system has order, a flowing from point to point. If something dams that flow, order collapses. The untrained might miss that collapse until it was too late. That's why the highest function of ecology is the understanding of consequences. And I just love that concept, the understanding of consequences. And I think the whole story of our attempt to stabilize dunes by planting various beach grasses, which, by the way, became a very pervasive activity, and it changed dune ecosystems forever. So, Rebecca, do you want to add anything to that first?
Well, I think that quote is lovely, and I think that it's from one of the characters, Pardo Kynes, who's the scientist.
Yes.
And they call that character the planetologist in the series. And one of my PhD committee members would, when I was doing a really good job, he would tell me that I was doing good planetology.
Oh, right. That's great. That's a great phrase, too, planetology. It's sort of, yes, that's the world we're dealing with. Let's sort of get into dune ecosystems then. And I know you could probably write many theses, and we could talk for a long time about dune ecosystems. But if you were to describe what you consider the various kind of key aspects of a dune ecosystem, what would those be?
Yeah, so in the Pacific Northwest, our sort of native dune ecosystem, the way it looked was these sort of low rolling, very hummocky, irregular dunes that are sand that's sort of sparsely vegetated by a vast diversity of plants. So that's the historic system, is this very low and very constantly changing dynamic system with a high number of different types of plants growing on it, not just a single plant dominating it.
So I'm now envisioning most of the dune systems I've seen, and they're really dominated by a single plant, and that would be a beech or a dune grass. I just realized I'm sort of stumbling into word usages, because I probably mistakenly interchanged the words beach grass and dune grass. So do we need to clean that up? Can you correct my, sloppiness in that?
Yeah, absolutely. So that kind of catapults us into the story. So the native dune system in the Pacific Northwest is that sort of low, hummocky, rolling dunes that I was describing before. But in the early 1900s, these two non-native grasses were introduced. And those grasses are called beach grasses. That's their common name, air quotes, right? Every plant has a scientific name and a common name. And the common name of these non-native plants, one of them is European beach grass, and the other is American beach grass. So these are non-native plants, American beach grass and European beach grass. But we also have a native grass that is a perennial grass, a long-living grass that grows on sandy beaches in Washington and Oregon. And the common name of that plant is American dune grass. So you can see how that might be confusing and lead to a lot of confusion. Yeah. So American dune grass, that's a native plant. The Latin name is Lamus mollis. American beech grass, that's a non-native plant. The Latin name is Ammophila brevoligulata.
I want to visualize some things. I have spent a fair amount of time on the Oregon coast, and not only the Dunes Recreation Area, but just up and down the coast. And I have a spectacular memory of gathering the root systems of, now I'm going to assume it was the beach grass. And they made this amazing network. And it was just, I don't know how to describe it. It was meshy. It was dense. It was fibrous. And you could really see that root system is going to stabilize dunes of decent size, actually. That particular memory. There were big dunes around. So I'm getting it in my head. The two beach grasses are likely to do that, right? And then the native beach grass, or native dune grass, is it as much of a stabilizer?
No. So these two non-native grasses, American beach grass and European beach grass, they were originally introduced in the early 1900s in order to stabilize the dunes. Right. They were intentionally planted just to do exactly what Frank Herbert looked at when he went down to, when he went on the, he actually rode in an airplane over the Oregon dunes and saw what they looked like down below. But the goal was to stabilize the shifting sand, and the beach grasses do that extremely well. They grow with this network of underground stems called rhizomes. So they have all of these underground stems that interlace into sort of a net. And if you dig down into the dunes in Washington, Oregon, you'll see that it's just dense with these stems and roots all growing together. So they do an amazing job at stabilizing the sand and building tall and linear dunes. So dunes, you know, if you imagine the Oregon coast dunes, right? Just a dune in a very straight line all the way down the coast. The problem, right, is that they're really good at building dunes at and stabilizing sand, but they outcompete native plants and they reduce the habitat for native animals. So you asked if our native dune grass, Lamus mollis, if it builds dunes like this, and the answer is no. And it and many other native plants really struggle when the dunes are so densely vegetated and so stable like the beach grasses build them.
So how does that change the environment for animal species?
Yeah, so the stable dunes, they're amazing for human animals, right? They hold the sand still.
Great recreation, right?
Yeah, they hold the sand still, and they make it possible for many communities to exist on the coastal beaches, right? They hold the sand still. They build these dunes that almost act like almost like a living seawall in front of communities that protect human settlements from storm surge and sea level rise, things like that. But for other animals, they can be a real challenge. Remember that the animals on our coast are not adapted to this system. So there are lots of birds, shorebirds, that won't nest in the native, in the invasive dune grasses because it's too dense and they prefer a sort of more open environment. So the western snowy plover is one that has been really negatively impacted by the spread of the beach grasses. There are other bird species that don't like the dense dunes. But sort of every animal responds in a slightly different way. There do appear to be some, like some small mice that actually love the presence of all of the grass seed that the non-native grasses produce. So there's sort of cascading ecological consequences you can think about.
So in that kind of visualizing sense, listeners here on the North Olympic Peninsula of Washington State, are there places that you would say typify a Native American dune grass system and other places that if you wanted to go see them, you could see the changed, I guess, dune system with the American and the European beach grasses?
Yeah. Well, one thing, amazing, great thing about the North Olympic coast is you have a lot of beaches that have some sand, but aren't super sandy beaches.
Yeah.
They're not having a lot of sand deposition is the science word for it, right? A lot of sand like getting loaded up on the beach over time. So those beaches often have the native dune grass, Lamus mollis, on them. That grass, you can recognize it if you're on a beach. It has really, really wide leaf blades that sort of flop over, and it has this waxy coating on the leaf blades that makes it look almost green blue. It's very beautiful.
And that's the native one.
That's our native grass. I would really, if you're really trying to find it on the North Olympic coast, one great place to go see it and think about it is the Dungeness Spit.
Oh, yes.
There's lots of the native grass, and there's lots of other beautiful native sandy dune-like plants on Dungeness Spit. I went there several years ago and did a survey and didn't find any of the non-native grass out there.
And I think non-native grass you can probably find almost anywhere.
Well, so
there's
on
sand,
the North,
is it?
Yeah. On the North Olympic coast, there's less of this beach grass, of American or European beach grass, because you don't have as much of the high sand deposition beaches. You can go out to the Nia Bay area, Macaw Beach and Shy Shy Beach, and there's European beach grass out there. And then in Puget Sound, pretty much anywhere where there's a lighthouse on a sandy spit, you will find European beach grass. Yeah. It was planted there to stabilize
it. Sure, that makes sense. So before we go much further, for anyone who is just turning in, this is Nan Evans, and this is KPTZ's Nature Now program, and I'm talking with Rebecca Mostow about dunes, dune grasses, and beach grasses. There we go. And her research on a new hybrid beach grass. That's the right word, right?
Yeah.
Rebecca, tell us a bit about the discovery of this hybrid species and your research. And you probably ought to start with saying, okay, so what is a hybrid species?
Yeah, so I'll just say that this is part of the work that I did as a part of my dissertation at Oregon State University with Dr. Sally Hacker and Dr. Felipe Barreto, were two people who were super closely involved with all this science. So this is work we did as a team. Science is always a team sport.
Yeah,
so a hybrid is not a Prius, right? Not the kind of hybrid that we're talking about today. But you can think about a mule as an example of a hybrid. So a hybrid is the offspring of two individuals who are different species. So when a horse and a donkey have an offspring together, that's a mule. And hybridization actually is pretty common in the natural world. It's something that happens and that some types of organisms are more ready to do than others, and grasses have a tendency to hybridize. So two species crossing.
So, of course, I have to ask the question. I think we all probably know that mules are not fertile. When the beach grasses hybridize, are they fertile or is it a mix of answers? Or
yeah, so that's a really good question. So I'll just back it up one step and say that, yes, so there are two species of beach grass. This is our non-native grass, American beach grass and European beach grass, and they are hybridizing on the Pacific Northwest coast. So in northern Oregon and southern Washington, we're finding hybrids of these two different species. And your question is that hybrid fertile? And we have some evidence of fertility, of sexual reproduction that the hybrid is doing, but we're still investigating sort of how fertile is it? When does that happen? What are the implications of that? So that's really a stay tuned type answer.
So what did you do in your research to determine that this was a hybrid and not just a variant of one or the other?
So the way that the hybrid was discovered was this lab that I was working in with Dr. Sally Hacker. She has this long-term dune monitoring project. And so there were scientists out on the dunes looking at the grasses, and they found these plants on the dunes that looked kind of like American beach grass, but kind of like European beach grass, intermediate in a lot of ways. And they were wondering, okay, what's going on here? Is this a hybrid? And that's when I joined the lab. And so the first thing I had to do was figure out if it's a hybrid. So the first thing I did was I looked at, what does it look like? I measured all these traits. How long are the how long are the leaves? How heavy are they? There are these little pieces of tissue on the plants that we use to identify them called ligules. Anyway, I'm measuring all these morphological characters and finding that this hybrid, it does sort of look like a hybrid in a lot of ways. And then I did some genetic work where I looked at how big is the genome of the hybrid, which can give us an idea of how many chromosomes does it have. And then I did some SNP genotyping. So I sequenced some of the DNA of the hybrid and some of the DNA of the parent species. And I found that the hybrid is just an exact intermediate. It's just an exact mix of the two parent species. So yeah, the short answer to that, how did we know it was a hybrid, is we looked at what the plant looks like and we looked at its genetics, and it is a hybrid.
As you think about the next set of questions to ask, and you know, like we all know, science raises more questions than it answers, what are the sets of questions that you think are most important to be asking, and particularly about what are likely to be the impacts of this hybrid species?
Yeah, so I think I would say there's two sets of questions that I think are the most important when we're investigating this hybrid. The first set of questions is about how much of the hybrid is there? Where is it? Is it spreading along the coast, right? So there's that one set of questions. And then there's this other set of questions that's about how will the hybrid, where it is, how is it impacting the dunes? So we'll take those one at a time.
Okay.
So yeah. First question, where is it? Second question, how is it impacting the dunes? So for the first question, I have put together what I'm calling a participatory science project. So a project where people who spend time on the beach can help search for the hybrid. And so this is just a small plug for it. If you also want to help search for the hybrid beach grass, you can go onto the iNaturalist website and search for hybrid beach grass, and you will find a project page with all of this information about how to identify the hybrid, where to look, how to upload your observations, pretty much anything you could need to get involved with helping us search for the hybrid.
I mean, that is cool. iNaturalist is such an amazing program or service. I mean, it's more than a program.
So iNaturalist is a website that allows you to upload your observations of living things. And we've partnered with them to build this community science participatory science project. If you want to get involved, I would love your help with that. Sort of anyone in Washington would be an amazing assistant to that project.
That's the real power of citizen science, is you can have more boots and eyes on the ground.
Exactly, exactly. So that was a project that I developed while I was working on my dissertation at Oregon State, and it's actually been taken over by another graduate student in Sally's lab, Risa Askaruth, and so it is continuing even though I'm no longer at OSU. So if you want to get involved searching for the hybrid, check it out. So that's a big part of how we're answering the question of how much hybrid is out there? Where is it? Is this something we really need to worry about? Is it spreading? And then the other set of questions are about how is the hybrid actually going to affect dunes, right? I told you before that there are two species of beach grasses, right? European beach grass and American beach grass. And both of those beach grasses stabilize the dunes and build these tall linear dunes. But they actually have slightly different effects on dune shape and on the kinds of plants that then can grow there and the habitat value for animals. And so we're wondering, will the hybrid affect the dunes in a different way as well?
Mm-hmm.
And so part of my dissertation work was I ran a big experiment where we looked at how the grasses interact with one another, how they grow in competition, and how densely the hybrid grows. And I think maybe I won't go into too many details about the experiment here, but you could come to my talk at the Portland Science Center and hear more about it. The main takeaway is that the hybrid grows really densely compared to its parent species, which has implications for the shape of the dune. It might build a taller or a more stable dune. And it also competes really aggressively with its parent species. So it outcompetes them for space, sort of elbows them out on the dune.
Oh, interesting. Do you have a sense whether did you just address this? Do you think it's more effective stabilizing, or do we even know that yet?
I think that's still, an area for more research. And there's more research on the hybrid happening in Sally Hacker's lab at Oregon State. Risa Askaruth, who I mentioned before, is a grad student working on that now. The hybrid grows very densely, which when I say densely, I mean there's lots of stems in a small area of sand, lots of stems sticking up all together, which means it might build taller dune or even a more stable dune. And it also puts a lot of energy into the below ground biomass. So earlier we were talking about this network of rhizomes, underground stems and roots in the sand under the dunes. And it does seem that the hybrid invests a lot of energy down there. So it might be building stable dunes. But
yeah, and I think with the more questions to come and the more information to come, that's a plug for attending Rebecca Mostow's lecture. It's at the Fort Worden. It's in the chapel. It's Sunday, February 5th at 3 p.m. And there's, of course, more information available on the Port Townsend Marine Science Center Lecture Series website. Thank you so very much, Rebecca, for joining us and giving us this little preview and helping me figure out the difference between beach grasses and dune grasses. And I think I've got it now.
Yeah, great. Yeah, thanks for having me on, Nan.
So now, as always, let's listen to that mystery sound again. Well, that's sweet. It's sort of like a tureet sound. I can't even come close to it. Is the sound of a snowy plover. The males make the sounds when they're attracting mates, and both sexes use it during sort of territorial and other interactions with species and with other interactions of members of their own species, I think. The sound, of course, is from our trusty All About Birds website that's maintained by the Cornell University Ornithology Lab. And in describing the snowy plovers, in basically they're sort of pale brownish shorebirds. They've got a partial either black or brown collar, short black bill. But Cornell Ornithology Lab has a really, I think I found an especially delightful and poetic description of the snowy plover. The dapper snowy plover scurries across sandy habitats as inconspicuously as a puff of seafoam blown by the wind, which is lovely. And, by the way, not only do they have that sort of scurrying behavior, but when they nest right on the beaches, and they're really hard to spot, which makes them particularly vulnerable and has resulted in the listing of the Pacific coast of the snowy plovers by the federal government as a threatened species. So with that, I want to thank listeners for joining us today. Hope you've enjoyed our discussion. And I want to ask you, are you curious about the natural world around us? Do you enjoy talking to people? Can you get really excited about helping others appreciate the wonders of nature and the natural world? Well, if you can, then please think about joining the Nature Now team. We're looking for a few great new team members. We have a fun time and it's endlessly fascinating. If you're at all interested, contact us at naturenow@kptz.org. Sound engineer and editor is Nora Petrich. I'm Nan Evans. And I want to encourage you, of course, always to go to the KPTZ website and you can listen to vast numbers of Nature Now podcasts. The ending music for today is by Hans Zimmer. He's a composer, conductor, producer of the soundtrack for the 2021 release of Dune, the movie. And he's also conducting and playing on these particular clips. So here we go. Dune, the music.